From the state capitol, the Florida Public Radio Network brings you Capitol Report.
Florida's budget numbers are better, but there is still at least a $1 billion shortfall.
Even though we're starting to grow and we're in recovery, to regain all the ground we lost in the Great Recession is just going to take a long time.
A year after a series of media reports detailing neglect and abuse in assisted living facilities, lawmakers are preparing to increase regulations.
And I think this goes a long way to make significant improvements that will guarantee the safety and well-being of the residents in our ALFs.
Lawmakers are turning their attention to doctors to limit the rise in workers' compensation rates, and a Senate panel votes to regulate internet cafes while the House aims for an all-out ban. I'm Tramell Gomes, and that's all coming up on Capitol Report. Today's state economists made only modest changes to their revenue forecast for the upcoming budget year. James Call reports it's dashing hopes that an improving economy might ease a $2 billion shortfall facing Florida lawmakers.
The state's chief economist is telling lawmakers that there is still a budget shortfall for next year, but it's not as wide as it was thought last October. Amy Baker briefed the Senate Budget Committee Thursday on the revised forecast. Consumer spending picked up in the last quarter of the year, producing more tax revenue that lawmakers can use to balance a state budget.
We're definitely in recovery. It's just a very slow recovery, and it's going to take several years to work out of the hole that we created in the Great Recession. I mean, we went back to levels that we hadn't seen in a decade in some sources. Even though we're starting to grow and we're in recovery, to regain all the ground we lost in the Great Recession is just going to take a long time.
Baker says state economists have revised upward sales tax receipts, which make up about 75% of the state's revenue. But Medicaid and pre-kindergarten are costing more than expected, while other expenses are down. Overall, though, Baker says the projected budget shortfall is about $200 million smaller than it was 3 months ago.
Well, I would say the range right now is $1 billion to $1.4 billion.
Okay,
$1 billion for the basic plan that's just about mainly off of estimating conference and a couple other things, no policy changes, up to $1.4 when you add additional Senate issues in.
The reference to Senate issues is the impact of implementing proposed policy changes. The House and Senate currently are at odds on how to proceed with a state budget. The Senate wants to delay finishing the spending plan until later in the spring. The House wants to pass a budget during the annual 60-day session, which is scheduled to end March 9th. And while senators discuss a projected $1 billion shortfall with Baker, Speaker Dean Cannon released general revenue allocations showing how the House proposes to close a $2 billion shortfall. For Florida Public Radio, I'm James Call.
State lawmakers are preparing to crack down on facilities that abuse seniors and people with mental health problems. Legislators unveiled two bills today that increase penalties and call for more training of staff at assisted living facilities. Lynn Hatter reports the proposals come in the wake of reports of abuse and neglect at those centers.
It was a good bill.
Democratic Senator Eleanor Sobel, along with all the members of the Senate's Health Regulation Committee, approved what may be the most sweeping overhaul of the state's assisted living industry since it was created more than four decades ago. A series of media reports last year chronicled a long history of abuse and neglect in assisted living facilities across the state. The Health Regulation Committee is chaired by Republican Senator Rene Garcia, who says the proposal is aimed at increasing oversight of those centers. Here he is reading from a long list of things the proposal would do.
Requires employees of state or local agencies that regulate or provide services to state-licensed facilities to report abuse, neglect, or exploitation. It increases the biannual licensing fee and per-resident fee if an ALF has one or more class one or class two violations within a 2 year prior to renewal. Previous to that,
and it goes on. That proposal, SPB 7174, boosts the amount of training, certification, and education that caregivers must have. It increases penalties and licensing fees for facilities that have had prior violations, and it calls for a shutdown of facilities where residents die due to neglect and abuse. The move is getting support from critics of the state's policies toward long-term care facilities, like Brian Lee, who was the long-term care ombudsman until Governor Rick Scott took office.
The enhancements are massive.
Lee says the bill shores up what he says are the state's flimsy regulations on assisted living facilities.
And we see improvements in administrator accountability, regulatory authority, staff training, residents' rights, and consumer information. And these are our outstanding improvements. With these seeds being sown, residents and families will reap substantially safer care for years to come.
Between July and December of last year, the Florida Agency for Healthcare Administration reported it imposed more than $600,000 in fines. Out of the more than 2,600 assisted living facilities in the state, the agency revoked 13 licenses and blocked 13 others from participating in Medicaid. 26 centers closed because of lawsuits and regulatory pressure. Meanwhile, a similar proposal on assisted living facilities, also called ALFs, was unveiled in the Senate's Children and Families Committee, where Senate Minority Leader Nan Rich serves.
And I think this goes a long way to make significant improvements that will guarantee the safety and well-being of the residents in our ALFs.
But the proposals could face some opposition from members of the Florida House of Representatives, which tends to resist regulation increases. Industry groups like the Florida Healthcare Association and the Florida Assisted Living Association say they haven't yet taken a position on the bills. However, on its website, the Assisted Living Association says, quote, "We must be cautious in developing one-size-fits-all regulations." Senate Children and Families Committee Chairwoman Rhonda Storms tried to head off criticism by saying she believes the bill is a reasonable response to problems within the industry.
And I hope that that the industry, if they are troubled by particular components, that they will continue to work with us. But we really must press forward on this, and we look forward to working with Health Regs on their proposed committee bill.
Both Senate committee proposals would dramatically increase the qualifications for facility administrators from a high school diploma to a college degree with coursework in health fields or 2 years of experience caring for residents. They would also impose criminal penalties for caregivers and administrators who falsify records. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Still to come on Capitol Report, workers' compensation rates are on the rise, and some say that's because of the prices doctors charge for medicines sold out of their offices.
This bill will, however, stop them from ripping off the system by charging extremely inflated fees for the medication.
A Florida lawmaker says he's trying to save the lungs of Floridians by expanding a statewide smoking ban, since he knows from personal experience.
In two different county courthouses, I have to fight my way through a cloud of smoke to get in or out of the building because people standing outside there smoking in close proximity to the exits.
And a Senate committee votes to regulate internet cafes.
Number one, you want to recognize reality. Internet cafes exist. They've existed for a while. And so we have to deal with that.
Lawmakers are considering a bill that would limit the price doctors can charge workers' compensation patients for repackaged medicine. Regan McCarthy reports the bill passed both chambers once before, only to be vetoed by then-Governor Charlie Crist in 2010.
Senator Alan Hayes, a Republican from Umatilla, says this measure is one of those things people hear about and think there ought to be a law against that. And he says that's exactly why he's sponsoring this bill. Hayes says repackaged drugs are sometimes sold for more than 600% of the cost of the medication, and he says that's driving up the cost of workers' compensation. His proposal would limit that.
There is nothing in this bill that prohibits or restricts the dispensing of medication by physicians. This bill will, however, stop them from ripping off the system by charging extremely inflated fees for the medication.
Hayes says the price increase comes when doctors repackage the drugs in their offices.
Most people think of repackaging something, just you take something out of one container and put it in another container and it's been repackaged. Well, that's really all that happens here, except that act of changing containers changing the quantity or the label of the prescription allows the assignment of a new national drug code, which then allows them to assign a different cost.
Under Hayes's bill, doctors dispensing repackaged medications to workers' comp patients would only be allowed to charge the average wholesale price of the drug plus a dispensing fee of $4.18, putting the cost more in line with what's charged at pharmacies. Hayes estimates the change would save $62 million a year, but the senator's math is in question. Senator Mike Bennett, a Republican from Bradenton, says a report from the chief financial officer's office doesn't match up with Hayes's claim.
They said the total dispensing last year was a total of $63 million. When I'm looking at their report and saying the total thing is $63 million, and you and the people who are advocating against your bill are saying that it's going to save $62 million, I don't know about you, but that tells me there's not enough left over for aspirin, much less anything else.
Lori Lovegren is from the National Council on Compensation Insurance. She says a $62 million savings can be realized if rate making is taken into account.
So in this particular case, $36 million is the savings in drug costs. The rest is the reduction in expenses. The type of expenses I'm talking about are the fact that when you reduce a benefit in the system, you also collect less taxes and assessments. You have less costs associated with adjusting particular claims. So those are the dollar costs that are added to the expense cost to come up to that total figure of $62 million.
Other lawmakers, like Senator Mike Fasano, a Republican from Newport Richey, raised concerns about the necessity of the law.
Why would we want to tell a doctor what he or she can charge when the carriers have every right in the world right now to decide whether that patient can go to a doctor that either dispenses or doesn't dispense, or a physician that overcharges? The carrier has the right to do that now. Why pass legislation?
The bill passed through the Senate Banking and Insurance Committee with an amendment from Democratic Senator Eleanor Sobol of Hollywood. The amendment would ensure that physicians would continue to be allowed to dispense and fill prescriptions, and it would keep insurance companies from being able to select the pharmacy or dispensing practitioner the patient can use. A similar bill is making its way through the House. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
You're listening to Capital Report on the Florida Public Radio Network. I'm Tramell Gomes. About 2,500 Floridians die from secondhand smoke, and a bill to further cut down on that is moving forward in the Florida legislature. As Sasha Cordner reports, one Florida lawmaker is trying to give local governments more room to further ban outdoor smoking on their properties, but some lawmakers worry about the unintended consequences of the proposal.
Republican Senator Alan Hayes of Umatilla says if cities and counties want to ban smoking in and around their buildings, they ought to have that right.
Currently, regulation of smoking is preempted to the state legislature, and this bill creates an exemption to the preemption by allowing cities and counties to restrict smoking on their properties to include areas outside their buildings and out of doors. It allows cities and counties to make decisions that fit their community needs. It only applies to property owned by the counties and municipalities and does not impact businesses or other entities owned by the private sector.
His bill is an expansion of the Florida Clean Indoor Air Act, which bans smoking in enclosed workplaces to cut down on the level of secondhand smoke. There are some exceptions, like private residences and designated smoking rooms in hotels and motels. Speaking in front of Senate Regulation Committee members, Senator Hayes proudly stated how much support he had with Senate Bill 746.
This bill is supported by the Florida League of Cities, the Florida Association of Counties, American Cancer Society, the Heart Association, the Lung Association, and the Tobacco Prevention Network. And so far, no one has contacted me to voice any opposition. It's good to bring a bill like this here, Mr. Chairman.
He also had the support of Senate President-designate Don Gates, who had some fun questioning Senator Hayes about how the bill applies to specific outdoor areas.
So you got a piece of property that might be 50 miles out in the woods in North Okaloosa County. That's not near any public building, but it's owned by the county. They might keep some road equipment out there or something like that stored out there. Let me just put it in the form of a question. It's not your intention, Senator Hayes, to stop somebody who's out there 50 miles out in the woods picking up a tractor for the county not to have a good cigar, right?
Senator Hayes? Senator Gates, you're absolutely correct, and I'm sure many members of this Senate would like to join them for that fine cigar. I leave it up to the judgment of the local officials.
But all fun and jokes aside, some lawmakers had trouble with how the smoking ban would apply to sidewalks.
What happens on a sidewalk? Is that a city property?
I can quote two personal experiences in two different county courthouses where I have to fight my way through a cloud of smoke to get in or out of the building because people standing outside there smoking in close proximity to the exits. So this bill will allow the counties or the cities to say you cannot smoke within 100 feet or whatever the distance they choose to do that. But the sidewalks, I'm willing to work if these things need to be clarified.
Senator Rene Garcia is the chairman of the Regulation Committee. He says though he would support the bill, he still had reservations about how it would apply to the outdoor seating at restaurants.
In my community, you know, sometimes in certain restaurants we'll have outdoor seating. And you told me you'll take care of the outdoor seating on the sidewalks. And they use that as maybe the smoking areas. And I know we want to go to a smoke-free environment constantly, and I strive for that. But I want to make sure that those restaurants won't be penalized because they do have that outdoor seating on sidewalks, which are municipal properties. So, I mean, I'll go ahead and vote for it today. But we need to bring some clarification to that and make sure that we don't penalize those outdoor seating restaurants on city sidewalks.
There was one suggestion from Senator Miguel Diaz de la Portilla to specify the distance of where the ban should apply to clear up the issue some lawmakers had with the sidewalks.
The way that it's defined now in the bill, it says on outdoor smoking on municipal property and counties may restrict outdoor on county property. And I would suggest to my friend and colleague, Senator Hayes, that perhaps you have government buildings and within a 50-foot radius, similar to what you use as far as the distance and, you know, polling places or what have you, maybe, you know, within 50 feet from the entrance of government buildings, whether they be municipal or county, might just eliminate that concern that both Senator Garcia and I have raised.
Senator Hayes' proposal did pass unanimously in the Senate Health Regulation Committee and moves on to its last stop before it heads to the Senate floor, the Senate Community Affairs Committee. But before that happens, Hayes says he is willing to work with lawmakers to address their concerns. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Here's a little bit of other news around the Capitol. Legislators are reviewing a bill that tackles adolescent prostitution. Instead of automatically arresting and prosecuting offenders, law enforcement would have the discretion in deciding whether the minors have acted of their own free will or by force. The Senate panel all agreed with the concept of the bill, but Mike Ramage, general counsel of the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, voiced concerns about some of the bill's language.
We're opposed to three lines in the bill.
Okay.
And the three lines are at 209, 210, and 211, where the Senate proposal in defining sexual abuse of a child proposes to put the phrase, the act of a child offering to engage in or engaging in prostitution, in the definition of sexual exploitation of a child.
Ramage went on to express concerns that the bill could give way to the decriminalization of prostitution. Lawmakers omitted the controversial lines, and the amended version passed through the committee unanimously. Some students are voicing their opposition to proposals like increasing tuition for STEM degrees and a bill that would allow the governor to pick the student representative of the board that oversees all 11 public universities. The students say they want more representation on the Board of Governors. They're also against a constitutional amendment proposal that would allow the governor to appoint the student representative to the board. Michael Sampson, a student at Florida State University, says he's also against tuition increases.
Students basically do not have the means right now. Like youth unemployment, I believe, is up more so now than it was in the past decade. And like raising tuition on anyone is an issue that I don't think should happen.
Governor Rick Scott has proposed freezing tuition this year, although universities still have the ability to raise their rates. Lawmakers have also been hearing from some institutions that they'd like to charge more for STEM degrees because those majors cost more to run. Here's Ronald J. Eben with a look at some of the action around the Capitol tomorrow.
Few meetings are set for Friday, as is the custom, as lawmakers head for home for the weekend. The Revenue Estimating Impact Conference meets at 9 a.m., but have more precise figures for the last quarter of 2011, and will make estimates for the rest of the year and into 2013. At a meeting last week, the conference indicated that so far the increase in revenue will have little impact on the budget, still with an estimated shortfall of around $2 billion. The House Redistricting Committee is scheduled to meet from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. to establish congressional and Florida House and Senate districts. The Senate has already approved its redistricting map. And that's the daybook for Friday, January 20th.
Finally, a Senate committee voted today to regulate internet cafes instead of shutting them down. James Call returns with this report telling how the move has dealt a blow to critics of the so-called sweepstakes operations who say they are nothing more than strip plaza casinos.
At the intersection of Florida laws governing slot machines and sweepstakes promotions is a gray area in which more than 1,000 internet cafes have sprouted. Operators say when customers buy internet time, they enter a sweepstakes, a game of chance. Sweepstakes are legal in Florida. However, cafe opponents say the only difference between these sweepstakes operations and a slot machine is where the money is paid and the winnings are collected. One has to be able to insert something into a machine for it to be a slot machine. At a cafe, one pays a cashier to activate a video monitor. No Florida appellate court has ruled on the issue. There have been three circuit court cases resulting in one not guilty verdict and two dismissed cases. Joe Cocciarella is with the Orange County State Attorney's Office, which has worked aggressively to shut down the cafes.
Court in Alabama that examined a similar situation said just because you take the components and separate them by wires and put them in different parts of the room doesn't mean you still don't have a slot machine. Here, the money may not be spent at the terminal where the player sits, but the ones we investigated, and I can't speak for the other 1,000, you went to the front desk and the cashier gave you your money, gave you cash. And so it becomes a factual dispute.
An Alabama court ruling did not carry much weight with the Senate Regulated Industries Committee. Senators voted 8-1 to regulate the cafes and allow them to stay in business. Miami Senator Miguel Diaz de la Portilla is sponsoring the measure.
Number one, you want to recognize reality. Internet cafes exist. They've existed for a while. And so we have to deal with that.
Exact numbers are hard to find. The industry is not regulated. But everyone seems to agree that there are between 1,000 and 1,400 internet cafes operating in strip plazas and storefronts throughout the state. A Florida State University study found that the cafes employ between 4,000 to 13,000 people and generate between $250 and $750 million annually. It concluded that the cafes have a positive fiscal impact for the state. Julie Slattery says she has operated two cafes in Melbourne for 5 years. Her cafes are in Senator Thad Altman's district. Here, Altman questions Slattery.
Have you ever had a drug bust at your facility?
We have never had one eensy-teensy bit of crime. We have police officers that play and come in and enjoy our establishments, and lots of retired ones.
No drug busts, no prostitution arrests, no fights, because I heard earlier some reference to that. What would you say the average age of your clients is?
On average, I would say maybe on average 50, 55. They, you know, all the way from younger ones to 85, 90 years old.
Slattery conceded to the committee that not all internet cafes are equal. She said if they are regulated, though, then the state can address the concerns critics have. Spokespeople for the Sheriff's Association and the Attorney General's Office support a ban. Cafe owners, vendors, and charitable organizations that receive money from the sweepstakes favor regulations over a prohibition. Senator Altman explains why he supports allowing the cafes to continue to operate.
From a government point of view, that we're very careful that we don't use the heavy arm of government to impede activities that law-abiding citizens engage on. And I think if there's a problem, I think the proper measured approach is to incrementally address it through a regulatory process, and if that doesn't solve the problem, then we may need to do more. I think this is the appropriate way of dealing with this issue.
A House committee has voted to ban the cafes, and Governor Rick Scott has called for them to be shut down. Senator De La Portilla says he understands that forces are gathering to impose a prohibition, but says he is optimistic that his proposal to regulate the cafes will move forward.
Well, you know, the governor has changed his mind on a couple of things, like the pill mills, for example. So, again, you know, this is the beginning of the process. I think that that as the process moves forward, there will be continued discussion and debate on the issue. And, you know, the governor or any legislator can, you know, change their minds on issues. It's a work in progress. It's a process.
While the regulation bill advances in the Senate, the House is on a different track. Longwood Representative Scott Plakin is sponsoring the House measure to close the cafes. However, he says it's too early in the session to make any predictions about whether the legislature will regulate or prohibit Internet cafes. For Florida Public Radio, I'm James Call.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are James Call, Sasha Cordner, Tom Flanagan, Lynn Hatter, and Regan McCarthy. Thanks also to the contributing stations along the Florida Public Radio Network. Taylor Cox provides technical assistance for Capitol Report, and I'm Tramell Gomes, inviting you to join us each weeknight for more reports from the state capitol.